This is the national public broadcast of renowned W. Dean Muhammad, Muslim leader.
In 2002, he was inducted into the Martin Luther King Jr. International Board of Preachers at Morehouse College. He is currently on the International Governing Board of the World Conference of Religions for Peace, a group of religious leaders from all over the world who seek peace through religious cooperation. He is also a member of the International Committee for the Peace Council, a group of religious leaders including the Dalai Lama, Bishop Desmond Tutu, and Sister Joan Chittister, who meet periodically to try to show by example that diverse faiths can work together for the common needs of the whole community of life. Imam Muhammad has bridged diversity in ways that most of us can't even imagine. For decades, he has spoken out and acted boldly and consistently in the service of tolerance, peace, and the building of genuine human community. It is my great honor to welcome to this meeting of the Association of Professional Chaplains, Imam Wallace Dean Muhammad.
Thank you. Thank you. We praise God. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. We praise God and we greet you with peace, as Muslims say, Assalamu alaikum. It is really a pleasure and a great honor to address you here at this luncheon banquet and to be invited by your Association of Professional Chaplains. And it's also a great pleasure for me to see upon entering so many members of our Association of Muslims. You make me feel very happy and proud of you. You're present here today. Wonderful. And this is good experience for you and for us to sit at the table with these fine servants of mankind, God and mankind, to share food with them and to hear their voices and their minds. And I hope you have done the same thing. I hope you have shared your voices and your minds at the tables with those who have invited us here and welcomed us here. We begin with the name of God, Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim, with God's name, the Merciful Benefactor, the Merciful Redeemer, or in the name of God, the Beneficent, the Merciful, as it's translated in some translations of our holy book, the Quran. I recall as a little boy, younger than 11 years old, maybe 6 or 7, my mother would dress me up real nicely, and she would tell me, I'm sending you to the temple. And I would go there, and I would hear the preacher preaching. And my father finally was able to come. He came home from prison, and I was about 14, I guess, close to 14 or 14. And he would open his lecture or his speech with, Islam is freedom, justice, and equality. And that was his habit over a period of maybe 15 years or more, that he would open his speech like that with a prayer first, and then Islam is freedom, justice, and equality. And that stuck with me, and I think it helped form my sensitivities and also my interests. And I today see the world of Islam, and I think that the whole world of Muslims need to see, understand that Islam is freedom, justice, and equality. Islam wants excellence for human beings, the same as Christianity, Judaism, all of our great religions, want excellence for human beings, behavioral excellence, excellence of the human nature that we have if there are conditions, circumstances to feed it and help us realize our excellence, our experience, a growth of excellence for our human life, for our soul as human beings. Proclaiming the excellence of man's common life. That's what Islam is. Proclaiming the excellence of man's common life under God. That he should serve community, the community of mankind, as a servant of God. And what we perhaps need more than anything else in this world today is the innocence that God created us with. All of us are born with innocence, that innocence. And some of the organizations that I am a member of, when we meet, the leaders often mention the need to achieve transparency. We have in our holy book the saying from our holy book, enter the door on hands and knees with the nose and the forehead touching the floor. As all of that is expressed in little short phrase in Arabic, وَدْخُلُوا الْبَابَ سُجَّدًا. And they translated, enter the door or enter the gate. Enter the door or enter the gate in submission. But that's not enough just to say in submission. I think when we describe it clearly and literally, it gives us the meaning, as I just said, as I have just given it to this honorable audience. There's a growing awareness among these leaders, like the leaders of this organization that you mentioned, me being a part of, or a representative of that organization, the World Conference of Religions for Peace. And I've heard our leader, Dr. Vinley, Bill Vinley, mention the need to achieve transparency. There is hope for us and the world as long as we have leaders in these organizations organized for peace, not only at home, but peace everywhere on this planet Earth, and for justice everywhere on this planet Earth. And we know we have many of such servants serving mankind under God as servants of God, working alone, or working with their friends in their neighborhoods, or working with their associates, their colleagues. So the world always has hope as long as we have such persons who have achieved or are trying to achieve transparency. The picture of world leaders today is shameful, that is saying the least. Whether the picture we are looking at is the picture of the Asian world, or European world, or African world, or the American people, we are looking at a shameful, very shameful picture. I recall in my childhood, older women, while they were observing the behavior of a child, they would say, that boy is rotten to the core. Now, we should never become rotten to the core. We have in our holy book the saying, from our holy book, the Quran, your death and your resurrection is likened to that of a single soul. The more our world works to mute human innocence, the more it gives itself to moral corruption of the human thought processes. Soon, the loss of transparency brings on death of the whole society. We know there's a living walking the earth, still walking the earth, but when we look at the general picture or the big picture, the picture of our publics and our leaders among them, it appears that we have allowed the whole society of man to lose human innocence, to lose transparency, openness, where you are not afraid to face your own secret thoughts, and you're not ashamed if others see your own secret thoughts. in time if we lose this core that God created us with. Business life will be void of human life. The approach to troubling issues won't have the support of this life that God gave us to save us in every area of life, in every area of life. African American neighborhoods remain in business life infancy because the leadership, I mean our leadership itself, is dead to man's original life that God gave us when he put us in the garden, or put our father in the garden. I got this saying from Christianity, from the Bible. Unless the children be reconciled. And I understand it means the life. Unless the children's life be reconciled with the life of the Father. And I know Christianity, perhaps, and many Christians, they see this as reconciled with God, yes, but also reconciled with Adam in his purity before he lost it to the seducer. Unless the children be reconciled in their life with the life of the Father, the whole earth will be cursed. And when I look at our world today on television and what leaders are talking about and the violence and the trouble in our world, it seems as though the whole world is under a curse. Selfish promotion of one's own interests invites not only moral death, but also the death of rational life as well. To work against moral life is stupid, not wisdom. Wisdom is to not see moral life separate from rational life. We all know in these great heavenly religions, as we sometimes call them, Judaism, Christianity, and Islam, we understand the fall of man, the fall of our father Adam. It came only when he ate of a certain forbidden food and caused the generations to separate moral life from rational life, or to see them separately. Moral life will soon disappoint us if it separates from rational life. And rational life will soon disappoint us if it separates from moral thought or moral life. I believe that Islam and Christianity are the same, and that we want to keep this life consistent, healthy, and whole, or complete. Muhammad the Prophet, in my conclusion, he said there will come a time that Jesus Christ and himself will be seen together. We believe in the birth of Jesus Christ without the help of man, or without the involvement of a male, a man. Maybe I can't use the same language, immaculate conception, but I feel comfortable in my own self, but I don't feel that comfortable speaking as a student of Islamic knowledge, to say it, put it that way. That's why I haven't put it that way. But I do feel comfortable in my own soul with that language. Islam and Christianity were separated not by knowledgeable people in these two religions, were separated by people who had political interests. We have a scholar in Islam, Dr. Ibrahim Izzeddin. He was given an interview to the folklore movement, international movement of Catholics started by Kjell Lubick, who was experiencing as a child, as a young lady, a teenager, about 17, I think she was, the horrors of World War II, bombs falling all around, and she decided to give her mind to Jesus Christ, peace be on him, as a servant, as a Catholic, but as a person working hard to bring people to love one another, to call people back to Christ's love. I became acquainted with her reading a book on her life, pardon me, and I fell in love with her soul and her mind, and we formed a friendship, and that friendship now is a friendship for myself and those who associated with me in the following, and herself, and those who associated her with her in her following. Yes. Anyway, the point that I want to make here is that when we study these two religions with innocent hearts, as it says in our book, none can touch it, none can grasp the beauty and substance of the Quran, except the purified ones. when we are innocent in our hearts and minds and our souls, we don't have any intentions that would shame us before God or the public if we would disclose those intentions. We have that transparency, and God will guide us to the substance and purity of our scriptures. I have read the Bible very carefully and very diligently. First, I said to myself, I want to be fair. I don't want to read the Bible and be picking it apart and questioning everything. I said, I won't be able to go through the book like I want to. I said to myself, I vow that I will not stop to pick anything apart or to question anything. I'll read the Bible from cover to cover. I did that. God helped me to do that. I did that. And I said, but at the same time, when I was making a pledge to myself to do it that way, I also said, and when I finish reading it that way, I'm going to pick it apart. And I did. I did. But the first reading converted me to the purity of the Bible. I see a continuous line of purity from Genesis to Revelation. It converted me to that purity. So God put me in a situation where I could study it and look at it critically. And I did. So I've come to the conclusion that our religions want a world order that respects God and has man working in the service of mankind under God. God says he does not want anything from us. He needs nothing from us. He only wants from us our obedience, In Islam, emphasis on behavior very strong. Muslims are not to just behave any kind of way. We can't follow the world of cultural trends that take us from life to death, back to life and then death. To me, nations that permit that kind of cultural life to control the lives of the masses of people are the many, and the leaders will also fall victim to it, because the common denominator for all of us is our moral life, our sensitive soul that God gave us, our emotions, etc. And no one is safe, no matter how educated we become, no matter how powerful we become, no one is safe from that danger of losing this soul if we allow the influences that are against the health of the soul to take over the life of the public or the life of society. In my opinion, we are no better than those nations, the ancient nations, who regulated their societies by that kind of logic or that kind of insight into the nature of human behavior. I believe that it's time for this great world that has advanced us in science and technology and advanced us in human nature. And we've become more socially mature because of the great advances we have made in the sciences and with our experience, our particular experience that we have with our democracy in the United States of America. So my prayer is that we study this society, study what governs our society, and get the devil out of our society. Peace to you. Assalamu alaikum.
We do have time for questions and discussion, and the Imam has graciously agreed to stay with us, except that I can't begin to see anybody that's out there. So, can we possibly get the lights turned to the wash, stage wash, so we can see what's going on here? It's scary. I've been here long enough now. I know what directions to give to get the lights the way I want them. Very bad. So the mics are coming up, and if there is a question or a comment, please feel free to come to a microphone. Oh, yeah, here we go.
My name is Berthe Williams, and I'm from Michigan. And
speak into the microphone.
Okay. My name is Berthe Williams, and I'm from Michigan. First, let me say it is such a blessing to be here. I thought it was really okay to walk across the stage and get my board certification after all those years of struggling with CPE. But to actually listen to the Honorable Elijah Muhammad's son, I just can't put it into words. So I thank you for that. But my question, you're so wise. You've traveled the world. You have credentials, and you're such a man of stature. I have a simple question. If you were sick in the hospital, could not get a hold of anyone of your own faith to come in and see about you, and one of us had to come in and see about you, what would you expect from us?
I would trust you to take care of me.
You know, I might be able to do that, but there are some of us that maybe won't be able to do it. So we need a little bit of advice. What would you want us to sit with you? Would you want us to sit with you? Would you want us to sing? Would you want us to hold your hand? Help us out just a little bit. Because some of us might not know what to do with you. You're like way up there, untouchable, like. But you got to be touched. And sooner or later, when you're in your sick bed, you're really down here with us. So if you could just give us a little bit of advice.
Yes. Well, what would I want you to do? I would want you to recognize that I was a Muslim first. Recognize that I'm a Muslim. And then ask me, how can we best make you comfortable while you're here with us? And I'll tell you, smoked pork smells good, and I know it tastes good. But don't put pork on the diet, please. And you didn't do it. They didn't do it. I had fish. I had salmon, very delicious. Some Muslims, you know, they make a big deal of not eating pork, but they commit bigger crimes. I never make a big deal. A pig is a sweet little animal to me. That's as cute as he can be, you know. I don't say he's ugly. I don't have to say he's ugly to deal with it, to deal with my discipline, you know. I don't have to say it's ugly, and I don't have to say it tastes bad. I know it tastes good. All of you, all wise, intelligent people with good taste, you eating it and enjoying it, I know it tastes good. That's why God didn't say, hey, stay away from pork. It's an ugly animal. They eat pork, it tastes bad. No, that's not the reason. It's psychological, you know. It's psychological. It's a symbol, really, of the confusion of moral life in people. So it's saying, don't eat of pig behavior. Don't eat of pig taste, etc. That's what it's really saying. Now, don't you Muslims who are here say, the Imam said, we can eat pig. It's not... No, you have to obey the tradition, you have to obey the rituals, yes, because they are very important. If you eat the meat, pretty soon you'll lose the meaning. For Muslims, we can't eat big pork, and there are other requirements we have. We need a place to pray, you know, and it doesn't take much. Some think they need a Latin carpet. We don't need the carpet, we pray on a wooden floor or any floor. As long as it's clean. Clean floor is good enough. So first I would like to be recognized as a Muslim by the person who's going to care for me. And then I would like to tell them the things that you may not be aware of that I need as a Muslim. That's all I would want.
For more on the ministry of Imam W. Dean Muhammad, call our right. Ministry of W. Dean Muhammad, 1-708-798-6750. All right, Ministry of Imam W. Dean Muhammad, Post Office Box 1061, Calumet City, Illinois, 60409. For Muslim Journal, see local distributors. And thanks for listening.